Good afternoon. This is the Chorus Call conference operator. Welcome, and thank you for joining the d'Amico Full Year 2019 Results Conference Call. As a reminder, all participants are in listen-only mode. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. Should anyone need assistance during the conference call, they may signal an operator by pressing star and zero on their telephone. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Paolo d'Amico, CEO of the company. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Welcome to everybody. Hello. Today for us is rather sort of surreal conversation because we are all spread out. Our CFO is in Monaco, and myself, I am in the middle in Italy in, as you can imagine, close up in a room. Anyhow, we are here to do our job, and we are going to do it the best way we can. Let's go to the executive summary first. As you remember, in 2019, we had a share capital increase. The subscription have been basically subscribed by 97.3% of the right, and the remaining part is being private placed. We basically had a capital increase amounting at 44 million euros. Now, net results. This posted a loss of 27.5 million in full year 2019, and this is versus 55.1 million in full year 2018. On Q4 2019, this made a profit of 4.9 million, and versus a loss of 13.9 million in Q4 2018. Here again, if we exclude the non-recurring items from both years and the effects of the IFRS 16 from 2019, this net result would amounted to $7.7 million for the full year loss for the full year 2019, compared with 57.4 million full year 2018. The result of Q4 2019 would have been 7.4 million profit versus 13 million loss in Q4 2018. The trend is very evident. The Q4 2019 represents the first profitable quarter since Q1 of 2017. The vessel disposal and sale and leaseback, this raised around 41.2 million in liquidity for such a transaction in full year 2019. We also had amendment to our financial covenants on all bank loans, and because the application of the IFRS 16 from January 1 of 2019 had a negative effect of 4.3% on our net worth to total asset ratio. We had a reduction of the minimum ratio to 25% from 35% as it used to be before on our covenants. Time charter equivalent, this daily spot rate was in full year 2019, $13,600, a little bit more than that, against $10,798 achieved in full year 2018. Q4 19, the time charter equivalent has been 17,242 against 11,617 in Q4 18. This achieved a totally daily average rate of $14,239 in full year 19 versus $12,184 in full year 18. Now, market outlook and time charter coverage. 54.9% of our available vessel days in 2020 are covered. The daily rate of 6,200, which is a profitable level for our company. We are having other time charter renewals coming in due for the remaining of the year, and we will, of course, negotiate. And we see that every time that we are renewing, as far as up to now, we achieve always a better rate. Of course, what's going on today is a big question mark. I don't want to quote on this because I think it's out of anybody's capability. Certainly what we can say is with a strong reduction of oil price should, should induce traders and oil companies to rush and buy at least to store not only crude, but also product. We also expect, it's been declared, strong stimulus from various countries, starting from China, but also from U.S. and the United States. Say that this fleet continues being extremely young. We took delivery of the last new building in September, and we will keep looking for opportunities to sell the older vessels and in way to deleverage the company. Said that, I would like to leave a word to the floor to Carlos, in way he can go more in the numbers. Thank you.
Yes, hello to good afternoon to everyone. Going on to page 8, this is a slide that we present regularly. Our CapEx commitments, as we stated several times, we invested a lot to renew our fleet. We ordered and took delivery of 22 new buildings. We terminated our new building program in October last year. And therefore, from 2020, we are much lighter in terms of CapEx commitments, which are only linked to maintenance CapEx. And 2020 is actually quite a big year in terms of maintenance. It's just a coincidence linked to the deliveries, the date of deliveries of vessels. We owned a lot of vessels. It's not a coincidence that 2015 is also was a big year in terms of CapEx. But from 2021, this number falls further to around 4 million, and the same applies to 2022. The CapEx numbers are a bit inflated relative to usual because it includes also the installation of the water ballast treatment systems. If we go on to the following page, once again, also here we have a big improvement relative to 19. In 2020, we are much lighter in terms of loan repayments. We fall from 52.5 million to 34.4, that's excluding balloons. That is because there was a facility of 17.5, which entailed, sorry, reimbursements of 15 million per annum, principal repayments that we fully reimbursed by the end of 19. So that was a facility that was on top of the traditional bank financing that we take when we buy our vessels. So that we terminated reimbursing that facility, and we are therefore much lighter in terms of debt repayments from 2020 onwards, which means more cash that is being generated for our shareholders. On page 10, we show the purchase options on the lease vessels. They are now all in the money. Last time we looked at this, there was one which was out of the money, but vessel prices continued moving up in the last quarter of the year. That, however, does not imply we are going to be exercising soon these options, because the LTVs, if we were to exercise, would still be quite high and not consistent with traditional bank debt financing, which can take you up to LTVs of around 65%. Therefore, since these are also, in terms of cost, quite competitive structures and quite flexible and long-term money, usually banks' tenors do not exceed 5 years, but a lot of these facilities, when they were when they started, they had 10-year maturities. They're also very covenant light, or most of them without any financial covenant. So we will keep them going until we can potentially refinance with bank debt without putting additional equity, or if we intend to exercise the options to then sell the vessels. But that is not the case right now, because these are part of younger vessels, eco vessels, that we want to keep for quite some time still. As Paolo mentioned, instead there are some older vessels that we plan to sell over the next few years into the stronger market that we are starting to experience. Going on to the following page, just a bit more detail on the fixtures that Paolo referred to. We continued fixing vessels at increasing rates throughout 19. For example, the last fixture on an Ecomar was at $18,000 per day, Ecomar 2 for 1 year. We fixed MR1, so that's a handy-sized vessel, for 1 year this year at $17,750 per day. So that's almost $20,000 per day for an MR2 equivalent, so that's also an Eco vessel, so that's a very strong rate. I must say this rate was not aligned with the market when it was done. It is a reflection of also a relationship, a very strong relationship we have with the charter that wanted the specific vessel at that point in time in that location. So, but nonetheless, it does confirm the trend of a strengthening market also on period contracts. Going on to the following page, we give more detail on the average rates for our period contracts and the percentage of the available vessel days that are covered through such contracts. We show that in Q2, we have 61% covered. In Q1 2020, we have 67% covered. If we look at 2020 as a whole, our coverage is around 55%, so it does decline quite fast throughout 2020, and we have only 19% covered in 2021. The good thing also is that the average rate at which these contracts rise throughout the year. So they rise from 15.9 in Q1, which is already significantly higher than the average rate for Q4 19. to 16.7 in Q4 2000 and almost 16.8 in Q4 2020. So that should definitely help us going forward, especially if we are also supported by the spot markets. And in this respect, also the fact that we have an increasing proportion of our fleet, which is eco, is also going to be helping us going forward, because these vessels do earn a premium, with today's lower oil price is slightly smaller, but we saw this premium not long ago arrive at around $2,000 per day. With today's oil price, maybe the premium of the eco vessels is probably around $1,000, $1,250 per day, but it's still significant. Going forward on page 13, we show the fleet evolution, the average number of vessels we control, and how that changes over the next 3 years. Our fleet falls slightly as we redeliver some short-term TCE vessels. But our exposure to the spot market actually rises, so does our sensitivity for every $1,000 per day change in TC equivalent earnings, and it increases from 6.5 million in 2020 to 11.5 million in 2022. going on to the following page, daily operating costs, confirming the trend that we have been seeing throughout 2019, also on a full year basis, we have a decrease, an important decrease in the operating costs relative to 2008 to 2018, which, as previously mentioned, is attributable to a younger fleet. The deliveries of all the new buildings over the last few years, a more homogeneous fleet, and also to technology, in particular the adoption of condition-based maintenance systems, which through equipment allows us to monitor the actual state of the spare parts, critical spare parts, and increasing the average life of these parts significantly, and also reducing off hires. So when necessary, we can replace earlier and avoid a breakdown, but on average, we can keep these parts going for much longer. And also the strong US dollar in 19 relative to 18 also helped in that respect. The same applies and even more so to G&A, because 75% of our costs, our G&A costs, are in currency. Currencies which are different from the US dollar, mostly the euro. So we did benefit from that. Going forward, on page 15, we show our ratio of the net financial position to fleet market value. It fell from 73% to 64% in 2019. So 64%, which is the figure at year end 19, it's one which we are much happier with, but we want to reduce this further going forward, as Paolo mentioned. So with the cash profits we expect to generate in 2020 with the S vessels we intend to sell, we believe we can bring this ratio down significantly. The factors which contributed to the reduction in the ratio in 19 are mainly the increase in vessel values and the capital increase that we closed in April of 19 of 44 million euros. In terms of vessel sales, this was already covered in the executive summary by Paolo. We did raise around $41 million through sale and sale leaseback transactions. We closed two sale and leaseback transactions in the beginning of the year. and then we sold four vessels that we had in JVs. They were all JV vessels, so one owned by Eco Tankers, on which we had a 33% participation. Two vessels owned by DM Shipping, on which we had 51% participation, and one vessel owned by Glenda International Shipping, on which we have a 50% participation. So that, of course, helped us our liquidity position throughout the year. Going forward, on page 16, we show our key line items of our P&L. In 2019, we lost $27.5 million, which is much better than the $55 million we lost in 18. But even if we exclude non-recurring items, then the result is even better. We lost only $7.7 million in 19 against a loss of $57.4 million in 18. And if we look at only Q4 19, the profit was of almost $5 million against a loss of almost 14 last year. And excluding non-recurring items, the profit was of $7.4 million in Q4 19 against a loss of $13 million in Q4 18. So the profit in Q4 19 is almost the same as the full year loss for 19, and the full year loss on 19 on a per day per vessel per day basis is equivalent to around $400 only. So it really gives an idea of how close we were to our break even in 19. Going on to the following page, just a small comment on the EBITDA. So even excluding the IFRS effects, 16 effects, which improved the EBITDA in 19, our EBITDA in 19 was four times higher than in the previous year. On the following page, we have a closer look at the daily TC equivalent earnings of our vessels, both the spot and the covered, and the blended result. So the spot average for the year was 13.7, which is not a great result, but the important thing is that Q4 19 was a daily average of 17.2, which is already a much more satisfactory result. It's a very profitable level for us. In 19 we had contracts at an average rate of 14.760, so the blended result was 14.2, which is, as previously mentioned, not very far from our P&L break-even. If we look at only Q4 19, our blended result, including the contracts at 15,100, was of almost $16,000. So, going on, we have just a comparison of our results, only looking at the MR2s here, and not all our vessels. We also have some handies on the spot. All of the other ones instead are employed through period contracts. We see that our MR2s on the spot earned an average of 14.2 relative to 13.7 for the Clarkson's average. If we look at only the Eco vessels, then the outperformance is bigger. It's 14%. We earned 15.7 relative to 13.7 for the Clarkson's average. And the blended rate for all our MR2s, including the period contracts, was 14.3. And that is it for the financial highlights. So I'll pass it over to Paolo again for the market overview.
Thank you. Now, page 20, you can see that there is still a very strong potential upside, not only on rates, but on rates and asset values. I mean, since the last peak on a one-year time charter, we are respectively 49% and 65% below the last cycle peak, which as far as one-year time charter rate, and as far as values, a five-year-old and a 10-year-old vessel are respectively 34% and 33% below the cycle. So, I mean, this doesn't mean that we are going back to the peak again. This means that the road to go up is still very long, and there is still a lot of potential in both in earnings and values. And this improvement, you can see it in page 21, when we started with a very low $12,000, excess of $12,000 rate in 16, and we are today on excess of $15,000 for a one-year time charter. It means the market is, as you certainly know, improving very well, and so are the values. The demand growth, now this is of course a growth of whatever coronavirus is going to leave us with, but let's say the fundamental are still of a demand growth, even if today there are a lot of corrections which have to be taken on the expectation that all the various agencies and brokers did at the beginning of the year. But one thing is important, and this is not going to change because of the virus, is the participation of refined products trade to the total oil trade. So refined products are becoming more and more actors in the oil trade, because from 25%, as they were in 2000, today they are basically at 35. So they are increasing their share. This is due to the displacement of refineries from the actual consumption market. The recovery has been so far driven by factors that you certainly know very well, which are supply driven. We had various factors from the bunkering, which has been a huge problem on the beginning of 2020, but already on the end of 2019, you had a run of refineries for middle distillates. You had maybe even too much, but was there. And when 1st January went in, we had a lot of logistical problems, also because suppliers were not ready yet with all their storage for the very low sulfur fuel. And this, of course, created inefficiency on the fleet. Ships in Singapore, which is the biggest bunkering hub in the world, ships have been waiting 15 days to bunker. We have a weather effect, which is typical in winter time, but we have to say we had very heavy weather in the Mexican Gulf, and we still have very heavy weather in the Mediterranean. Scrubber installation, this is on through all shipping. I mean, a lot of ships have been sent to the shipyards to retrofit scrubbers. And I would add to this two things. Number one, the installation of this scrubber is being totally undervalued by the owners and by the shipyards. So the time consuming is by far longer than what was thought. And to this, you have to add now coronavirus, because a lot of this activity was happening in China, and China, as you know, declared force majeure on many of the works done, not only on new buildings, but also on the retrofitting and other dry dock issues. Then we had the strong element, which of course hits the crude oil, the crude market, but at the end, at cascade, comes down to us also on the clean, is being the sanction on the COSCO fleet in October, end of September, beginning of October, which, as you know, took off a fleet of the LCC, which is close to 44 ships. This is really been pushing the market up. I would say this has been the first element to turn around the market when many others came in. Floating storage, which we suppose is going to increase now due to the low price of a barrel, is already in act. I understand that there is a Saudi company looking for something like 18 VLCCs. And of course, we have coronavirus, which the only, I would say, positive effect is the fact that is delaying ships in the shipyards, so is keeping down the supply side of the thing. If we move on to page 24, the impact that coronavirus had on product tankers has been not always negative, because I have to say you had of course, Chinese refinery, they start slowing down their throughput because they were already on surplus of product. But we had a market which was not following this refining slowdown. In fact, we had a rising cargoes from China to the U.S. coast of the United States, and not only China, also Korea, with jet fuel, where U.S. was in deficit. We had refining activities coming back from the Middle East. They are coming out. Some refineries are coming out of maintenance period. We have a continuous strong exports of products from the U.S. Gulf to South America, which has not really been affected by coronavirus at all. And we have a lower vessel deliveries. I remember you that normally the big bulk of the new building delivery happens in January, February, March, because whatever is ready in November, December is postponed to January in way of gaining 1 year. These deliveries have been delayed by coronavirus, because of course the Chinese yard they couldn't deliver, and this of course adds to the ships which are there to retrofit their scrubbers. What is possible after all this? There has been in the press that China certainly is going to come in with a huge stimulus program, something which is equivalent at 4% of its GDP. So we are talking about really big numbers. The Fed already eased the monetary policy, and they are still coming out with something more. And something certainly has to be expected from Europe. So if we sum up all these things, and if coronavirus, let's say, is not going to be too long, we can have a big counter effect due to all these interventions. Of course, refining volumes have been in 2020, didn't start very well because, as we say, China had to slow down its production. We expect a slight decrease in 2020 from whatever it was always forecast at the end of last year. Now, how much, to be frank, and nobody knows, because it all depends really how long this thing is going to go. I mean, today now, with the news of today that America stopped all flights from Europe to United States. So this is another hit, of course. I mean, we are going to have a lot of jet fuel to store, which can easily end up in also in floating storage, by the way. But talking about growth in refinery capacity, 2019 has been a record year. It's been estimated the growth of 2 million barrels per day. But if we look at the period of 2019 to 2023, the growth looks like something like 6.4 million barrels. Now, this 80% of these numbers is going to happen between Middle East and China and the rest of Far East. So here again, far away from Europe. And this, and we go to page 28, is a change in the refining landscape. And European refining capacity is certainly on a downward trend. And this will create an increase of demand for shipping, for seaborne transportation. The OPEC cuts, reversal of OPEC cuts, so the fact that the Saudis and Russians didn't agree, basically, will benefit my tankers initially, but can be, on long term, a threat to U.S. crude export, because, as you know, Saudi Arabia is by far closer to China than America. And this is less ton miles if China will start rebuying from Saudi Arabia instead of the United States. Page 31, we have a slowing fleet growth. Looking at MRs and LR1, we expect a growth on only 2% in 2020 and 0.8% in 2021. And this sums up, I would say, to today a slowdown in ordering. Is due to the fact that ship owners also are afraid of building ships with technology unknown, and there is not too much equity out there to do it. The big guys of the big investors are not moving that much anymore on new buildings, at least up to now. So we can think that the supplies will stay the way it is for a while. The expectation is the market is to get tighter. Clarkson, after he revised his expectation on due to coronavirus, expect an expansion of the product tanker demand of 3.7%, which, as I said before, will exceed totally the supply of new building expected. On page 35, we have the opinions of various brokers that I leave it to you to read. And why invest in this? And this, I leave the floor to Carlos to do it. Thank you.
Yeah. Just quickly to have a quick look at our NAV. So if we look at the net asset value in absolute terms, not on a per share basis, after reaching a bottom in 2016, and then we touched a similar level in December 2018, it has been moving up. Of course, this is also thanks to the capital increase that we pursued in 2019. But to a large extent, the improvement also reflects the increase in asset values that we have been experiencing throughout 2019. So from a bottom of 218 million in December 2018, the NAV of the company rose to $314 million. On a per share basis in US dollars, our NAV now is at the end of December was at $0.25 per share. So that means that at the end of December we were trading at almost 40% discount to NAV. As you can imagine, now this discount is actually significantly higher given the turbulence in the market and the worries surrounding the coronavirus, which have hit the shares of our company as well as those of many of our peers. As you saw from the results that we are publishing today and from the market insights we provided to you relating to Q1 this year, the concerns seem to be largely overdone. Then, of course, we don't have a crystal ball. The coronavirus issue is a very serious one, firstly from a human perspective, but of course also from an economic perspective. We don't underestimate it in any way. And in that respect, I just want to mention that we, as a company, have taken many initiatives to protect our employees, not only those which have been mandated by governments, but also often going beyond that, in countries which are a bit slower to respond to the crisis than Italy, which is at the forefront today in terms of intervention. So the effects that, as Paolo mentioned, of the OPEC reversal of the OPEC cuts are extremely important for our sector. We saw that already in 2015, which was a very good year for us, where we earned over $50 million. The same dynamics seem now to be at play again. Also, at the time, the world economy was slowing. This time, it's probably going to be more serious because of this coronavirus. But it's a big question mark if they are able to deal with it in a relatively short period of time, because governments are deal with it aggressively. Then there's a very good chance of a recovery already in the second half of this year. Otherwise, we might, for an economic recovery, I mean, otherwise we might have to wait for next year. But we counter cyclically in 2015, although the world economy was slowing, we did very well. So it is not the same could happen in 2020. Because the world could be flooded with oil. We saw that the crude oil curve went into contango. This contango is steepening. Today oil is down again another 6%, the front end of the curve. Also, refined petroleum products, forward curves and contango. So there is a big incentive to, and a growing incentive to store oil also on boats. And take capacity out of the system, and buy cheap oil today, process it, and sell it in the, for sale in the future at a higher price. So it could really play out in our favor, and surprisingly so, given the very complicated and delicate economic scenario that we are facing today. So I believe that's it, and I pass it over to you. Please let us know if you have any questions.
This is the Chorus Call conference operator, and we will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. To remove yourself from the question queue, please press star and two. We kindly ask to use handsets when asking questions or to pick up the receiver. Anyone who has a question may press star and one at this time. That's star and one. The first question is from Matteo Bonizzoni with Kepler. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. I have two questions. The first one, in your presentation, you show that the demand growth, according to Clarkson, should be 3.75%, while the fleet growth should be in the region of 2%. Can you provide a little bit of sensitivity on this 3.75%? In other words, is it a recent estimate that already includes the potential impact of the epidemics or not? So do you think we could be materially below this 3.75% demand growth? The second question is about the discount at which your stock is trading versus NAV. So the net asset value is slightly increased to $0.25 per share. And the stock is trading now, I would say, in the region of 70% discount versus your net asset value. So, apart that we are in a very peculiar market condition, but do you think that the asset values could, for example, go down from this level? So do you see risk of deflation in the asset value for your ships? Thanks.
On the Clarkson's number, just a quick answer there. The value is from a March update of Clarkson's, okay? But it's not our estimate, it's their estimate. And I'm not 100% sure what kind of considerations they made to arrive at that figure. But if it is a March estimate, as I'm saying it is, then of course there is some estimation of the impact of the coronavirus, but this virus is developing very fast, and so I don't know what scenarios they developed when they arrived at this forecast. For sure, they haven't included in this estimate the decision, which the breakdown of the negotiations of OPEC on Friday, on last Friday. So, and that is short term, much more important, as we have seen, because we have seen the rates of our vessels move up over the last few days. It is more important. It is outweighing the effects of the virus short term. Then longer term, it's a big question mark. But right now, that seems to be the case, and I assume that they haven't included this effect in their forecast. So it is a big question mark. Unfortunately, it's not a perfect science forecasting for shipping, and especially for product tankers. And especially in this environment we are in right now, where there are a lot of very important variables out there that have to be better evaluated their path to be able to really make a better forecast. So, but if we look at the facts, the spot market has moved up considerably this week. And not so much for MRs, which were already very strong. They have been outperforming all the other product tankers this year by a big margin, They have been doing better than the LR1s and LR2s, not only on a relative basis, on an absolute basis. But it was very beneficial for the LRs because they are more correlated, immediately correlated with the crude tankers, and we have seen the L rates go up to again on certain routes $100,000 per day or more. Suezmax rates also go up considerably. And that has pulled up also the bigger product tankers, which are now trading at a premium to the MRs, which is not surprising. So I think this is really something which has happened over the last 5 days only, and we have to see how this plays out throughout the rest of the year. But as we were mentioning, in 2015, we had a very similar scenario, but with a much higher fleet growth. The fleet growth was of around 5%, and this year the fleet growth is of around 2%. So we had an exceptionally strong market in 2015, despite a fleet growth of 4.6%. With a fleet growth of 2%, maybe you can imagine what could happen this year. That I believe answers the first question.
Okay, and on the discount.
On the NAV, on the NAV, the asset values. We have five vessels that we classified as held for sale on our financials. So we are currently not marketing all the vessels, all those vessels, but we intend to sell them over the next 12 months. Because we believe they're going to be a strong enough market to do so at attractive values. So we are positive on the second-hand vessel values. On the negotiations that we are now performing, we are not seeing any difference, any decrease in values, I would say. So we have to see, because, of course, there is a lot of uncertainty out there. But the rates are good. And so as long as the freight rates are positive, the period rates are good, the vessel values, which are very correlated with that, should stay up. So we don't see currently the risk of a big correction in vessel values.
Okay, thank you.
The next question is from Daniele Alibranti with MainFirst. Please go ahead.
Yes, hello everybody, and thanks for taking my questions. We've seen last week of the production cut and the cooperation between OPEC and non-OPEC producers collapsing. Now it seems that the OPEC and non-OPEC countries are basically free to produce as much as they want. I was wondering if further oil downturn, how would you benefit from this situation, and if you maybe are concerned on the demand side. My second question is if you can elaborate a little bit more on what will be your approach on being more aggressive on fixing rate versus exploiting the spot market? How would you balance these? Thanks very much.
If I understood well, the first question is, if a further reduction on the barrel, what is the benefit for us? And the first benefit, of course, is our bunker cost, which is going down, and as you know, is the number one cost we have. This is, of course, if talking about our spot ships. We are already coming from a long slide, because if you think that in January the low sulfur fuel was at $700 a ton, you can imagine how much we are saving today. As far as our strategy has been that we have over 50% of the fleet which is covered by term contracts. Some of them are due now, and we are renewing them at very profitable rates. we just fixed one handy for 1 year, just a slight over, under $18,000 a day, and we are offered for the next shifts coming due, which is one LR1 now, for a very, very good rate. I cannot, unfortunately, make number now because it's not fixed yet. But we are extremely, talking of extremely profitable rates. And there are still people looking for ships for 3 years. I'm talking about major oil companies. And also that we are negotiating. So our attitude is to take certainly the cover where the money is good, is profitable, and is big. But in the meantime, we are playing with something less than 50% of our fleet, the spot market, and I think we have very good earnings today. No, I think, I know.
Okay, thank you.
Gentlemen, there are no more questions registered at this time. Mr. D'Amico, Mr. Mottola, I give the floor back to you.
Okay, then I thank you very much for participating to our call. I hope we have been explanatory enough. As I say, it's a little bit surreal because Carlos is in one place, I am in another one. And so I hope we satisfied all your questions. So from my side, I say just say hello and to the next time.